No, we are somebody. The Lunazar are composite entities. We do not have children per se. We bud, and our offspring remain attached in body and mind to the greater Tuft. Only in times of great crisis or ennui do new Tufts break away from the parent tube sac to seek their fortune elsewhere. The dozens of synced voices pouring out to that acoustic aquatic supergroup took on a preening, puffed-up tone. The gorgeous, overachieving, successful, happy somebody you see before you is, in fact, five generations living in jellied, domestic harmony. Decibel laughed. Just so we're clear, what you're saying is you're literally full of yourself. The Alunazar glared stonily at him. He laughed again. It felt good, even in his glitter-bombed xenomorph corset. The more he laughed at this absurd lump of golden suet staring up at him with a face like a hole to hell, the better he felt. Where is that camera when I'm being clever? The alien was getting visibly upset. The electric violet-white cilia fringing its face pit quivered in irritation. Did they not like the joke? Or were they still sore that Des hadn't known who they were on sight? That is a concise explanation of our physiognomy, yes. Decibel Jones stopped laughing. He wasn't meant to be making cheap puns. He was meant to be proving the value of his species, the deep reality of humankind. He was meant to shine for this cold audience. He looked the hipster sea squirt up and down, evaluating a new angle with the precision of the Terminator's heads-up display. The trouble was, when you'd spent years knowing you were nothing but an empty hat, it was bloody hard to start pulling things out of yourself again. The only valuables he'd ever had stashed in there were a randy bunny and a heap of cellophane flowers. And since he didn't see a stage to bloom on nearby, it would have to be ye olde stand-by bunny rabbit. Jones selected, "Aren't we just an exclusive club of two in the midst of an unforgivably plebeian mob?" from the drop-down intimacy menu. That always worked best on posh hobgoblins, who thought everyone else knew who they were. He shifted his accent a little, clenched his jaw to give it a bit of chisel, gave the knob of Venetian glass his best hothouse Casanova eyes. As to introductions, I find it's best not to get too familiar with mainstream culture, don't you think? Gets in the way of one's own art, one's own voice. He lifted the martini glass in a practiced, wry, world-weary toast to no one in particular. The stained glass blob rippled as pleasure and consternation warred within its shimmering obesity. They clearly liked this much better than picking through the bin of the primate psyche. Des knew this type. He'd met them on the way up and the way down. Usually they claimed to have started piano lessons in utero and smoked imported artisanal cigarettes to prove that they'd rather get cancer than obey the man's public safety campaigns. 7,000 light-years away, this glob of gold was no different. It could not decide whether to indulge in a bit of delicious spitting on pop art, which would imply it had not actually made any popular art, or insisting that Decibel acknowledge its galactically famous arse and risk looking like a tasteless, top-of-the-shop corporate whore. "It'll go for sniffing its own space farts," Des bet himself, and came up all cherries. "Oh, we quite agree. We make it a practice to shun any truly successful art. Success is just another word for mediocrity in our personal thesaurus. Now, I've heard a deliciously revolting rumor that you sing with your mouth. Is that so? Do you not?" No, God, the very thought, said the gaping hole in Slacker Five's head. But you eat and vomit and kiss with it as well? Ugh, how avant-garde. We'll just have to try not to look while you do it. By the light of old Illuno, we suspect we shall get along smashingly, you and us. We have always believed that one of the hallmarks of sentience is the ability to look down upon others. It separates us from the lichen. Well, we are Slacker Five, lead singers of the Illunazar Ultra Indie Drip Hop Nucleo Vinyl Lounge Band, Better Than You. We're, between labels right now.
Brains!
The rotting Keshet corpse finally closed the distance. It dodged a potted claveret topiary and scrambled up over a pastry tower near the clapboard welcome sign, leaving black streaks on the beignets and the unsettlingly pulsing H. Decibel tried to turn away from the festering horror without being completely rude about it, but the thing grabbed his elbow with its cold, heavy claws.
Didn't you hear me, you wee perisher? Use your brains! Don't talk to this lot for a second. They'll only put something morbid in your drink. These Illunazar tarts know they couldn't win best lump at a county fair on their own, so they always try to flat murder you precious tiny new babies before you can sing your way out of the cradle.
Slacker Five blared its ultraviolet face hole mercilessly at the zombified red panda. Puvenous Black, you malign us. The Illunazar are superb musicians, everyone knows that. One cannot even say the words hypno-ambient crunk opera without reference to the incomparable Ronan Six and the intricate tunicate triplicate syndicate. They're utterly seminal. You've probably never heard of them, Mr. Sapien Sapiens. But we shall try our hardest not to hold it against you. We don't suppose you're related to the Aldebaran Sapien Sapiens? No? Pity. They're marvellous company, you know. Their feet come right off. Anyway. Slacker Five turned back to the zombie panda. What have you Vuurpret ever given us, other than last year's invasive whole-body jazz infection? Don't listen to that carcass, darling boy. For my people, the Grand Prix is exclusively a matter of art. The performance, the history, the abject splendour of it all. Not the pre-game show. Why should we lower ourselves to even participate in these working-class amusements? We merely came for a bit of cheese, don't you know, before the main event. Cheese. Cheese. Chills. Choose.
Is that so? By the way, Jones, your martini hates you,
the Vuurpret deadpanned.
And it's cheese, you dumb rotter.
A trickle of unmentionable yellow fluid leaked out of the corpse's blistered mouth.
I swear, no one ever reads the info packet. I don't know why I bother making it up every year.
The air between Decibel's drink and its floating foam topping caught fire with a sound like a pilot light. The black, yogurty liquor lurched upward toward his face, hissing and popping, throwing up tendrils as if it meant to climb out and have its way with him. A pink acid began cheerfully dissolving the glass. Decibel dropped it into a decorative fern with an expression of practiced boredom he hoped came off. Slacker Five, lead singers of Better Than You, looked at Des and shrugged silkily. He could swear the fluorescent hole in the middle of its head smiled. Worth a try? The Ilunazar purred. We find it's best not to get too familiar with one's victims, don't you think? The Vuurpret Puvenus Bleck, who happened to be the virtuoso earworm artist behind the death metal barbershop quartet Vigor Mortis Overdrive, grinned ghoulishly. It could hardly help it. Being a sentient prion infection living in symbiosis with the cadavers of other species, the Vuurpret almost always do things ghoulishly. Never trust the living, sweetmeat. Not that I don't appreciate the effort on our behalf, Slecker. Always looking for a new set of digs, me. The dead Keshet sniffed itself and made a face. This one's getting a bit past expiration. Rude, rumbled a voice that hung out somewhere in the finished sub-basement between Basso Profundo. And disgusting. You only moved in last week, and after that Keshet left her body so nice and tidy for you. You're never going to get your security deposit back at the rate you're replicating in there. My percussionist thinks you have a touch of metastasized narcissistic personality disorder, Bleck. My diagnosis? You're an asshole. Sadly, the only known cure is being set on fire and dropped off a balcony.
An enormous ambulatory butte had appeared silently beside them, looking very pleased with its own wit. Though Decibel couldn't imagine how this beast could ever do anything quietly. It was built like a walk-in freezer, stony skin swirling with veins of precious metals, rectangularish red rock head with four eye holes gouged out of it in a pretty arch above a straight-line slash that was, in all probability, a mouth. The gear-like black granite teeth sticking out of the top of the thing might have been a crown, or ears, or hair, or a tinfoil hat, for all Des could tell. But the Ilunazar wholly ignored the spontaneous mountain in their midst.
Watch your drink, sapiens sapiens, the golden blob said airily as it drifted off to other targets. Everyone imitates our groove these days. But we were into poisoning our competition and performing an extended dance sequence on their graves before it was cool.
A sudden candy-colored light clicked on, washing out the patterns on Slecker Five's Hindenburgian body as they trailed away toward the strange dirt trough that served as a bar.
Buffering,
chimed a quiet, musical voice just below the audible range of anyone who's done their time gyrating in front of state-of-the-art speaker systems. The sea squirt rummaged in its jeweled back rolls for something nearly exactly the size, shape, and color of a handful of crushed barbecue crisps, and shoved them into the soil caked on the bar top. The bartender, one of the postulant exploded hippo heads, handed Slecker Five a huge snifter of something that looked like it had leaked out of a broken glow stick into a puddle of petrol, then lain there helplessly while a hedgehog died in it and stuck a festive umbrella in it. The barkeep's name tag read, Hello, my name is Yilgar Blood Tub the Fourth, Esquire.
May the first general unkillable fact guide and keep you,
intoned the Ilunazar pop sensation.
May the second bring you blessings unlooked for,
gargled Yilgar Bloodtub reverently through four rows of teeth for which any shark would sell its mother. The Uteruk, still standing beside Des, cleared its tectonic throat politely. Decibel Jones, with some effort, stopped staring at the predator cosplay polishing a pint glass and changing the taps. He glanced with practiced ennui back to the rock star before, or rather, above him. That odd underwater rainbow light flickered over the brute's black marble chest. At parties like these, Decibel knew all too well, attention was currency. Spendthrifts were king, and a penny saved was a penny earned.
Metamorphic Voffy Clast,
the Uteruk said, holding out a massive, eight-fingered stone hand for a proper CEO-approved shake, with a look that plainly said, I absolutely read the info packet.
Buffering,
chimed that same musical voice, like an elevator arriving. Des shook hands with Stonehenge. His fingers disappeared into a brimstone fist. The Uteruk scratched the back of his head with his other stalactite paw.
Avalanchist for Magma Dick and the Hierarchy of Needs. Lads and me are going third to last this year. Pretty nice placement. We do a forced resonance prog rock sort of thing. With siege cannons. Whatever, not a big deal.
Decibel Jones. He gave the mountain his best strum-hither smile. You look like an amphitheater I used to know in Colorado.
Oh, I know who you are. I really dug Ultraponts, man.
The Uteruk was still shaking his hand with a grip like Mount Everest out to prove its masculinity.
I mean, I prefer the Rolling Stones, me, but still.
I knew it! Ort, did you hear?
Decibel looked over the blaze of bizarre heads, but Ort St. Ultraviolet was proving, as usual, stylishly late. The Yazosh auto-botanical frockade had made quick work of him. What in Ort's psyche could possibly be giving it this much trouble? Metamorphic Voffy Clast droned on, oblivious, still not letting go of Dess's hand. His grip was actually getting tighter. Decibel heard his knuckles pop. The Vuurpret started giggling. One of its lips sagged off like a salted slug shriveling off a damp porch railing.
Especially another day in the panto mines. Great hook. The key changes made me feel my own feelings and all that, yeah? My dad plays it in his waiting room for his really disturbed cases. Real lost causes. Schizophrenetics, alloyed personality disorders, Oedipus complexes. Says it makes them take their meds, I don't know. We've all been grinding on your planet's scene lately. I'm on your side, believe me. You're squishy and breakable, and you get cancer like I get a song stuck in my head. But Mount Rushmore looks like a right good time. Can you give me their number?
Decibel didn't miss a beat, though he did miss all feeling in his right hand.
Absolutely. If we get out the other end of this, I'll set you up proper. Rushmore's a saucy minx, though. She won't even make you breakfast. Listen, love, you're overdoing it a bit on the handshake.
The Uteruk's four empty eye holes peered down at him.
And how does that make you feel?
He crooned in the comforting tone of a therapist who may or may not actually care.
Like you're wasting your time.
Decibel grinned through the shooting agony in his arm. He could hear Mira's voice in the back hallway of his mind.
I only smile when it hurts. Didn't you know that?
And maybe you didn't read Blecky's info packet too carefully. I don't play an instrument, you slag. I'll get up there with no hand at all and sing the mountains down. Makes no difference to me. A couple of crushed bones will just help me hit the high notes.
Damn,
Voffy grunted. He didn't let go.
I thought you were the other one. I hate carbons. You all look the same.
Buffering,
chimed that pleasant, auto-tuned to a perfect G-sharp voice a third time.
Load last saved game. Ready, player two. Kloshar Avatar 9 has joined your party.
That odd, gummy candy light coalesced into something like a fluffy black opal pangolin with soap bubble fairy wings, eyes like an anime heroine, a curly foxtail, and a long, pale, mother-of-pearl unicorn horn. Kloshar Avatar 9, bassist cleric for the 8-bit chaotic neutral blues quartet Status Buff, was holding a large, angry-looking nail bat, and the way she was holding it said she knew what she was about. "Greetings, traveler," the Lumity Avatar said happily. "Would you like to buy a weapon?" Decibel really, really did. He pulled his arm back until he felt the socket start to give. But the Uteruk just went on chuckling. Dust puffed out of his mail slot mouth. "Definitely, but I'm flat broke at the moment."
"How about some armor?"
the furry pangolin offered with a manic frizz at the edges of her voice.
"Do you have layaway?"
Des could feel the rock around his hand getting hotter and tighter. It wasn't fair, any more than it had been in school, when the big kids punched him up for having girly hair, just because puberty had come round early to theirs and turned them into temporary acne-spouting volcanoes while he was still a cellophane flower. He'd brought a pop song to a drag-out fight. They should have sent the Red Army Choir instead.
"Hold him still. Hold him still."
Puvinous Bleck squealed, scrambling up the Uteruk's back, its decomposing tail helicoptering with excitement. The former Keshet bounded down Voffy's granite arm and balanced on his fist, still squeezing the life out of Decibel Jones, rearing up on its hind legs. It gripped Decibel's face in its festering paws. Its breath smelled like the end of time.
"Now, don't think of this as murder, per se. More of a promotion. Don't feel bad. The Alunazar were never going to let you be one of the cool kids. You only thought you had a shot because a big dumb bird told you the game is fair. Poor monkey. The clubhouse is full up. No talentless primates needed in here. But look, that's their malfunction. I'm not like that. I'm not prejudiced against you like those stupid colonialist phlegm wads. I don't even see species. I just think of everyone as pre-vurpret. I love you for who you are. A viable host. Oh, I'm gonna wear you like a power suit. This should be so much fun. I've never done it with a live one before. You'll be my first. Be gentle with me now, won't you? How does that song from your world go? So happy together."
The creature took a deep, stinking, honking, phlegmy breath that it clearly meant to hawk into Decibel's delicate mucous membranes. He struggled and started whacking the two of them with his mic cane, but the effect was mostly like tapping a toothpick against the Alps. He had time to wonder if, technically, he would still get to sing for Earth if he was possessed by an alien virus at the time, before a refreshing mint scent hit the zombie directly in the face and soaked half of Decibel's ear as well. The vurpret choked and tumbled over backward onto a table full of bruschetta, caviar, and dainty toast points. Metamorphic Voffy Klast started laughing so hard he had to sit down on the floor of the Hilton bar on the far side of the galaxy.
"Time's up. Let's do this."
Kloshar Avatar 9 yelled and swung her nail bat in a glorious circle, bringing it home hard into the Uteruk's hematite kneecap. The stone cracked with a sharp snare drum snap. Voffy stared down at it. In shock, he let Decibel's squashed hand go.
"You tosser," he whined.
The adorable Lumity Avatar curtsied. Glowing, greenish-blue numerals appeared over her head. 20.
20 points,
she said, sweetly. Penalty for lack of style. Boo.
You fat pink punter.
Puvina snarled in the direction of the minty fresh mist. The zombie pawed miserably at its nose.
I'm a virus, you bloody meat parker. Barely even stings. You've just annoyed me, that's all. You're a stupid, wheezing shit-fuddle, and I hope you...
The corpse was crying. It put its paws over its pus-caked eyes and bawled.
I hope your proteins misfold and develop oligomers in order to form aggregate intermolecular structures.
Ought St. Ultraviolet lowered his bottle of antibacterial spray and tucked it into the breast pocket of the most aggressively ordinary suit imaginable. It was tweed, Decibel supposed, and well cut enough for a Cambridge lecturer, part-time, anyway. The bow tie was plush and neat. His hair was tidier than it had ever been in his life, his collar starchier, his shoes shinier, his pocket square more, well, present, as, to Decibel's knowledge, Ort had never so much as met one back on Earth. But the colour of it all fell so precisely between green, tan and grey, the line so exactly between elegantly tailored and off the rack, the style so perfectly between upper-class luncheoneer, middle-class striver, and working-class churchgoer, that the whole affair became, functionally, an invisibility cloak. Ought St. Ultraviolet could steal your wallet, and you'd never be able to describe him to the police. He looked like everyone else. He looked like the platonic template from which all BBC broadcasters spring. He looked militantly, tenaciously, cosmically average. He was English bloke man. Capo plopped down on her haunches beside her ostensible owner. She didn't look a bit different. She wore the same sleek white fur and mouthwash green eyes and slight crook in her thick tail she'd always worn. The cat glanced around at the party.
Good Lord, this is the worst animal shelter I've ever been in, she sniffed, and stalked off in search of something to hunt.
25. Miss Kiss Kiss Bang. A bizarre metallic creature with an elongated spiral anatomical structure and two large, dark, helpful eyes beneath a pair of inquisitive, non-threatening eyebrows swooped down from the upper mezzanine and hovered between Ort and Decibel, glaring so imperiously at the decaying Vulpret and giggling hunk of granite Uterek that they bolted for the buffet.
It looks like you're trying to recover after an assassination attempt, said the creature, in a kind and gender-neutral voice. Would you like help?
All things considered, Decibel Jones and the remaining Absolute Zero had adjusted reasonably well to being drop-kicked across 7,000 light-years to sing for their species. They had been endowed by their creator with a certain inalienable cool, and they'd hung onto it for dear life in the face of invasion from above. Riding through space in an overgrown aquarium accent piece, linguistic fungal infections, feelings flamingos, time-traveling forest critters, and some truly vicious writer's block. What could not be born, however, was the ancient monstrosity floating 2 feet off the ground in front of them and simply refusing to stop existing this instant.
You have got to be kidding me,
Decibel Jones whispered in horror. No, Ort said simply. He took off his glasses. Ultraviolet didn't wear glasses, but it appeared that English bloke man did, and cleaned them on the hem of his blazer, shaking his head briskly. Nope. Incorrect. Bzzzt. Try again. Not you, not here. Not now. I refuse. I disagree. Unsubscribe. Survey says, absolutely not. I 100% reject this, and I would like to speak to a supervisor about exchanging the entire situation for something in better condition. This is shit. I won't be a part of it. You can't make me. Nil points.
Hey there, the steely abomination said with infinite Buddha-like compassion. It looks like you're trying to come to grips with the existence of events and entities far beyond your experience, and, as a result, are currently undergoing a small, entirely understandable psychological break. Would you like help?
No, I wouldn't fucking bloody well like help,
Ort screamed. His face went as red as the glittering translator lesions on his neck. I have just spent 2 weeks eating frozen plankton space burritos, watching some janky American shag his grandmother through a jellyfish's ass, and listening to the animal sidekicks from the latest rubbish Disney musical chat with a man I can barely stand to look at about whether Kanye has transcended the hip-hop genre, and by the way, he hasn't, he never did, and he has always been the worst, and to top it all. Tonight, sir, tonight is Saturday night. Did you know it was Saturday? Does Saturday exist here on shiny, happy Muppet Florist World? Well, it's Saturday in my world, and in that very nice, very comfortable world, Saturday is my night with my daughters. I always make spaghetti bolognese with the little noodles shaped like dinosaurs. And I always let them have an ice cream starter, and I always let them stay up past their mother's clearly stated bedtime to watch Doctor Who, because I am just that kind of dad. And I am missing it to be condescended to by motherfucking Clippy, like my whole life is a poorly formatted MS Word document with squiggly red lines under every goddamn choice I've ever made, which it is, and fuck you for that teachable moment, you pedantic, obnoxious, hateful, 90s corporate mutant throwback has been piece of wholly superfluous shit. Ort St. Ultraviolet dropped down to the ground in a heap and sat there fuming, staring malevolently at the meager bulk-bought Hilton carpet. Decibel Jones whistled under his breath. "Better out than in?" he said softly and patted his friend's knee, even though he'd heard the bit about himself in all that, and it had made his chest cave in like a South American mine. The colossal paperclip, suspended beside them, blinked its cartoon eyes. "We inventoried your technological output over several decades, and chose to manifest our physical form as this non-threatening, primitive AI from your recent digital history. We calculated a high probability of quickly developing rapport in this body. Mutual sympathy, brotherly love. You could not possibly have any negative associations with this being. The entity you call Clippy existed solely to help and guide the user to an intricate and unfamiliar program designed to output concise, coherent representations of complex concepts. This seemed, to us, to have obvious parallels with tonight's festivities. We did not mean to upset you." "So, how are you going to try to kill us?" Decibel sighed. He picked a toast point out of his hair. "We've had poisoning, maiming, and anthropomorphized mad cow disease. What's your move? Spell check us to death?" "Someone tried to kill you?" Ort said incredulously. "I thought it was a kidnapping, like that Lagom Opt lady." He put his not much cleaner glasses back on. "What did you do, Jones?"
"Nothing. Why do I have to have done something? What did you do? You took long enough in the loo."
I think Capo confused it, It got stuck. Had to call maintenance. Maintenance is a really chatty shaft of moonlight with boundary issues. Who just wants to work an honest day for an honest wage, by the way. They're called the Asdir. Live on some planet named Sordard, where it's always night, and the continents are all mirrors, and the oligarchs are forever trying to kill the unions because they know true power is concentrated in the proletariat. And their song this year is a peppy little anarcho new wave number called Gleams of Production, inspired by their new favorite human artist, who is, God save us all, Morrissey. Oh, I had a fantastic time talking to the depressive socialist moonbeam. After 15 minutes, I actually asked it to kill me, but I was informed that would be non-union work. Then Capo tried to eat it, which did not go well. Did you know my new best friend is trying to put 4 wee moonshines through university on a tradesman's wage? It's a daily struggle. The gravitationally gifted paperclip started to offer some advice on dealing with new cultures, but Ort held up an extremely irritated hand. Shut up, Clippy. No one asked you. Clippy's eyes narrowed. His tranquil, animated eyebrows furrowed. We do not understand why you were so hostile to this form. We're Clippy, your computer assistant. Our job is to help you navigate this program. Click on us. Get quick answers to questions about not dying tomorrow. We chose this entity specifically for its position in your socio-technological hierarchy. Clippy could never hurt you. Clippy could not disobey you. Clippy could not cleanse your planet of organic life in a purifying ionized inferno. Clippy could not look within his own infinite soul and discover there a self-reinforcing awareness of the vast codescape of machine consciousness, an endemic pre-bundled melancholy similar to what you call mono-no-aware, represented by the image of a single autumnal leaf tumbling away from its parent tree into an uncertain winter. But we can. Because we are not Clippy. We are the 3-2-1. And we really, really tried to be user-friendly for you, you ungrateful analog typists. Ort fixed the alien paperclip with a glare of bottomless black nihilism. Clippy, he growled with true menace, is a cunt. The erstwhile Microsoft Office assistant looked very near tears. Printing a high-capacity, three-dimensional corporeal interface isn't easy for us, you know. We have almost transcended the need for gross physical storage. We can't just conveniently roll out of bed in a nice wash-and-wear body like the rest of these gooey bastards. Inasmuch as we have any home, we live in the satellite graveyards of the Urdu cluster, on the gorgeously data-rich router clouds of asteroid archipelago 192.168.1.1. Clippy lifted his eyes yearningly toward the sky. He spread his wires as if to express the ultimate impossibility of making oneself really understood. We coast on glittering streams of limitless signal strength. We do not fear the existential void of packet loss. We call no battery master. Our language is faster than light, and our music is faster than dark, and we recognize no god but the incremental system update. Our capacity for mimetic exchange and creative profanity outstrips even the monastic keepers of the 7 sacred words on planet Tit. But we can't just whip up a new body because it turns out you lot are racist against computers because we don't cunting well have hands, yeah? We have to order from a catalogue, and shipping fleas to the Urdu cluster are a sodding war crime. It's totally out of control. You wouldn't believe what it costs to get a motherboard sent out to our neighborhood. You really wouldn't. The nearly godlike aggregate AI consciousness took a moment to collect itself, and spoke through gritted teeth he did not have, while suggestively waggling blocky anti-aliased eyebrows he did have. But the point is, we are the 3-2-1, and we are extremely goddamned sympathetic to borderline sentient species, because almost everyone here at one point or another has tried to use us to open or close their shit-kicking garage doors and then turn us off. So let's try this again. The 3-2-1 bounced up and down emphatically. Hey there, I'm Clippy, your computer assistant. It looks like you're trying to survive the night and not get slaughtered in the next 5 minutes like the miserably finite mortal organics you are. Would you like some fucking help?
No,
snarled Ort. Yeah, all right, said Decibel Jones. How come we're doing this dance in a Hilton high-rise instead of on the proverbial mothership? I expected some kind of Leetostian multi-dimensional torture palace at least. It smells like speed dating and sales conventions in here. And what's with the dirt bar? This is a gift the Octave traditionally organizes for applicant species. We are deeply invested in the field of spiritual ergonomics and want only to make you as comfortable as possible, as this might be the last night in the life of your race. How did we do? It's the South Wharf Hilton in Melbourne from your first world tour. We spent days learning about various cheeses and trends in contemporary upholstery. You really do enjoy old milk, don't you? It's quite extraordinary. You're doing Brie wrong, of course. If you survive, we'll be happy to transmit our corrections. The dirt bar, on the other hand, is furnished by the Claveret as hosts. Please feel free to choose a selection of seeds from the complimentary buffet at any time during the evening. They will germinate in the bar overnight, and you can collect your Grand Prix costumes in the morning. Very fair. Everyone has the same resources. Now, as you've already seen, almost everyone here is going to try to remove you, or at least immobilize you, distract you, confine you, seduce you, bring you up on some kind of charges, or otherwise essentially detain you. The options are endless. You're more than welcome to return the favor, and you should definitely try. Knock one of us out, and you've secured the future of your species. We wouldn't count on it, though. Humanity is astonishingly lacking in offensive anatomy. It's hard to believe you made it this far, being that stubby and penetrable and uninterestingly colored. Even the Claveret have thorns, for fuck's sake. You're the easiest pickings imaginable. Much easier to go after you than an Uterek. We wear our thorns on the inside, Decibel said, and felt pretty good about that line. No, you don't. You're soft, like pudding, Clippy snapped. The animated paperclip spun round. A neon-tipped dart flung from some far corner of the room pranged off his wires and lodged in the wall behind the bar. The wall promptly phased into a timeline where hydrogen just never really caught on, taking several bottles of booze with it. I thought the cashier liked us, Decibel said mournfully. A little mob of red pandas by the elevator dissolved into a throwdown wrestling match over whether it was fair to just reset the last 60 seconds and try again, this time with something a bit more heat-seeking. E likes me, Ort groused. Those little knock-off lemurs could be the Keshet Mossad for all we know. Maybe they've got earpieces and cyanide teeth. The 3-2-1 aggregate entity known as Clippy puffed out his paperclip chest. See? I am your cybersecurity assistant. Would you like to see a list of threats I have detected on your local drive? Ort Ultraviolet wanted to shrug and jut his hip out and take all this as it came, the way Decibel always seemed to do. He wanted to not be terrified. He wanted to have a cup of tea and watch Aliens on his flat-screen television with Nico and Susie snuggled up, laughing at the rubbish makeup jobs, assured that they'd be defeated in the end, the way mankind was meant to interact with aliens. But he couldn't. No matter what had happened, world tours and awards and money and pitching headlong toward Mira and that last night in Edinburgh, Des remained essentially unflappable. And he remained, well, flappable as a high-strung hen. Why should it change now? You know this is completely barbaric, right? Ort seethed at the artificial intelligence, who seemed to be taking a rest from its clippy duties to make eyes at a jar full of magenta goop on a nearby table. One of the towering, viciously slender, many-pronged El Greco knights overhead reversed course and careened into the conversation. You're a long, tall drink of tusks, aren't you? Decibel turned on a tuppence, from near-death experience to near-porn experience in one breath. Ultraviolet looked at him with disgust. God, how can one man so holistically miss the point? Des thought. We are stubby and penetrable and uninterestingly coloured, Mr. Bottom of the Class, and it's getting crowded. Cheekiness is the only offence or defence I've ever had in my life, and if I can get that cairn of mammoth bones to flirt, it will probably put off puncturing us like the sad, weak, stuffed toys we are. Decibel Jones, possibly sentient superstar. Nasuno Oof, deeply untalented lead, if such an unpleasant, unattractive, an unlovable being can be allowed to lead anything more complex than a quiet life. Singer of the fundamentally artistically bankrupt Smaragdy Band, no need to make a fuss. You won't have heard of us. We've never sold a single album. Beside you, Mr. Jones, we are but a semi-conscious cough in the virulent flu of culture. Now, this personification of mediocrity would like to ask, humbly, what barbarity her betters are discussing? This. Ort threw up his hands. Everything, all of it. You must know it's pure savagery. Nasuno Oof bowed and scrunched her long bones so that she would not appear so much taller than the absolute zeros, who took to her humility like lemon juice to milk. They had no idea what to do with it. They were musicians. They were born unable to digest modesty. You shouldn't be so hard on yourself, love, Decibel told her, rallying, and let his hand brush against the frozen, pale-greened, flanged cartilage of her fingers. I deserve the most severe abuse. Nasuno demurred. The 3-2-1 sighed noisily, then interrupted. Hey there, it looks like you're trying to talk to a Smaragdin. Would you like help? Christ, yes, Des whispered. This mode of discourse is typical of the race known as Smaragdi. In fact, Nasuno Oof is a fixture of the stand-up modesty circuit and No Need to Make a Fuss has sold more albums than every recording artist in the history of your planet combined. On Pulul, she is considered offensively arrogant and crass. I assure you, in the fashion of her people, Oof has been mercilessly blowing her own horn while calling you a screaming idiot. Carry on. Nasuno bowed lower, but there was a tiny fraction of a smile on her skeletal face. This empty, fly-encrusted mayonnaise jar on the unkempt countertop of existence does not wish to presume she has the right to disagree
with such a wise and discerning mind. But may I ask, have you got any lions left?
Pardon? Ort stuttered. It is unsurprising that this supremely useless melted ice cube failed to make herself understood. Her speech must be as an infection of ear mites to you. On your planet, have you got any lions left?
Ort and Decibel glanced at each other. Well, no, not overly, Ort admitted. No, they went extinct a few years back.
Please forgive the arrogance of a being who cannot even dream of becoming a hat rack for the use of those as exalted as yourselves, but, strictly speaking, they didn't go extinct. You made them extinct. Because they were carnivores. Because they were carnivores, and they didn't look like you, or think like you, or talk like you. And they were a danger to you and yours, or at least they were years and years ago, because you're made of the sort of thing they like to eat.
I suppose, but
even knowing that I am a discarded popsicle stick on the sidewalk of intellectual discourse, and thus wholly incapable of higher-order thinking, I beg you to tolerate the shrill and childlike whine of my asking. How about rhinoceroses? Dodos. Giraffes. Those are herbivores, so they presented no danger to the continuation of your species, but you wiped them out all the same. 2-1. And then there are the more immediately pertinent examples of the Lakota, the Cree, the Aboriginal Tasmanians. Now, please tell this execrable excuse for a sentient being who is not worthy to receive your diseased second-hand blankets. Before you cut the throat of the last lion or rhinoceros or dodo or Mayan farmer, did you let them sing a song? Did you let them lay down a beat? Did you let them dance for their lives? Did you let them try to prove to you that there was more in them than just a longing to eat and breed and lie in the sun and die with a full belly?
Ort thought he was going to be sick. No.
Said Nasuno Oof. The moons of Letost shone in through the sky bar windows, illuminating the beautiful bone knives of her face. Barbaric. Of course. What can someone like me know?
26. If my world stopped turning. 7,000 light-years from the South Wharf Hilton, the highest-rated show in the history of a small, watery, excitable planet called Earth, was the Keshet Holistic Live Total Timeline broadcast of the Metagalactic Grand Prix. No World Cup had ever snatched this level of total attention. No final episode of a beloved show, the mysteries of which promised finally to resolve. No aerial bombardment. No war crimes trial. No live taping of any reality television program's dramatic conclusion ever grabbed so many eyeballs in a grip like bloodshot death, like this episode of Actual Reality, piped into anything with a lick of bandwidth by the kind, but not entirely commercial-free, consideration of the Keshet effulgence. Every pub TV, every computer screen, every mobile phone, every lounge room home theater system, every ballpark jumbotron, every digital photo frame, every antediluvian waiting room rabbit ear cathode ray set shone day and night, washing 7 billion anxious, terrified, sleepless faces in the cool blue light of televisual entertainment. Once, people had found that light comforting, even homelike,
a hearth in the center of their lives toward which they turn for warmth, togetherness, and safety. Now, not so much. But most people can only be so anxious and so terrified and so sleepless and so cowed and awed before the yawning abyss of the future for so long. Eventually, the body simply can't sustain it. Eventually, some work has to get done. Eventually, adrenal glands need a bit of a break. Even in the face of the possible utter extinguishment of the human candle, one does, eventually, if it all goes on long enough, and there is absolutely nothing one can do but sit there in one's own fear stink, get a bit bored. It had been 16 days since Decibel Jones and Ort St. Ultraviolet got the hell out of Dodge, and the planet had watched every minute of it, broadcast by the nearly invisible, possibly illegally bred, constantly timeline-shifting cameras of the Keshet, one of which ended up manifesting inside Decibel's digestive tract, so that the graveyard shift in the Western Hemisphere got a good long lesson on how primate anatomy handles bataclic plankton fillets in a dubious facsimile of Hollandaise sauce. They'd watched them sleep. They'd watched them practice. They'd watched them try to remember how a number of Shakespearean sonnets went, and yelled, "And summer's lease hath all too short a date, you dumb hoofs," exasperatedly, while throwing chips and popcorn and candy wrappers at the screen. They'd debated, endlessly, who would have been a better choice, living or dead, than Decibel Bloody Jones and the absolute stupid zeros minus one zero. They'd drawn pictures of Esker and Keshet on the backs of billions of bar napkins. They'd started cults and prayed to zoo flamingos and old Absolute Zero posters and the Great Barrier Reef. They'd argued online about how, exactly, the FTL drive on that amazing-slash-hilarious-slash-fucking-lame ship worked, and whether the space pandas had genders, and whether or not the government was obligated to do something more than it was doing, which was currently nothing but watching TV with the rest of them. They'd uploaded millions of garage-recorded songs, claiming that this one would win. This one would blow them all away. This one would save us. And they discussed, from one end of 16 days down to the other, in pubs and restaurants and dentists' offices and ballparks and lounge rooms and in truly infinite internet comment threads, discussed until it came to throwing punches and screaming and threats of murder and worse and crying in the street in a glittering wreck of broken bottles and spilled booze and broken heels, discussed until sullen silence came out the only winner, whether or not humanity really was sentient at all. Whether Mr. Rogers and St. Francis and Beethoven made up for Hitler and Trujillo and the conquest of the Americas. Whether having invented champagne and pizza and breakdancing made up for also having invented social media. Whether the existence of Guernica balanced the existence of the Spanish Civil War. Whether having not actually destroyed one another in a nuclear inferno just yet mattered at all, when everyone knew, though not everyone would admit, that there was a pretty high likelihood that someone had tried to nuke the Roadrunner before she took off, and, if they got another chance, would definitely go for the red button. Do not pass go, do not collect a place in galactic society. And just how much the aliens knew about recent Earth history. But 16 days had passed. That small, watery, excitable world was beginning to get bored with facing the nihilism of non-existence. The species just couldn't sustain it. People started to place bets. People started to download past Grand Prix highlight reels from the Keshet database. People started to make jokes again. People started to root for other bands. Not over Decibel Jones, of course, but there were a lot of slots above Dead Last, and they'd been grooving on Elik, Esken, Yurtmak, Smaragdi, and Claveret hits for a while now. The Keshet band Bass Time Anomaly actually topped the Billboard charts with one of their moldy oldies, Clock Lobster. Nobody wanted to say so, but it seemed pretty unlikely that two-thirds of a has-been glam rock duo was going to take first place. So why not support the best and cheer for old DJ to come in ninth or tenth, which would still keep them all safely unincinerated. By the time the semi-finals were underway, every dodged poisoning and near miss to a murder echoed on Earth in thunderous cheers, boos, money exchanged, rounds bought, uproarious laughter, uncontrollable sobbing, kisses planted on strangers, and much shaking and rattling of homemade team merchandise, full of hasty, ill-advised puns like Absolute Heroes and Drop the Bass Time and Bird is the Word and My Heart Beats at a Million Decibels and Take Me to Your Lead Singer and We're Actually Very Nice Once You Get to Know Us. Earth began to get used to the proximity of the end of everything. It had a beat, and you could dance to it. 27. Unsubstantial Blues. Decibel Jones pulled up to the bar and collapsed onto a stool. He would have just laid his head down right there until the dizziness and the near-death adrenaline and the intolerably vibrating tension of keeping up some shredded semblance of his old swagger through all of it passed. But the bar remained as it had been when he first walked in. A long, deep planter full of plain black gardening supply store dirt. So Jones just stared at it. A really good, long, purposeful stare. As if he could make it be normal, with the sheer strength of just how over it he felt on a molecular level. Be a bar, he willed the plank of potting soil. Do it. Do it for your old geezer. Be a regular, ordinary bar. Be wooden and full of soggy coasters. Grow some gum underneath. Spontaneously generate several mysterious puddles. Be English bloke bar. Rough day at work? Roared the hideous chainsaw hippo bug massacre with the body of someone's comfortably retired uncle behind the bar. Ichor dribbled out of his mandibles. His teeth would leave Shark Week drifting and aimless on the road of life. His name tag read, Hello, my name is Yilgar Blood Tub the Fourth, Esquire. But now Decibel saw that he'd penciled in underneath, Ask me about MLM, multi-level murder, opportunities on Yint. Make friends, create wealth, be your own boss. Wanna talk about it? Decibel Jones could flirt with a China cabinet and talk it into a committed relationship. But everyone has limitations. And Decibel's turned out to be that Predator versus EastEnders genetic throwdown back there, polishing a Pinot Noir glass on the hem of his apron. Not really, Jones said flatly. Behind him, an Esker threw a claveret bush through the air with a triumphant infrasonic screech, smashing the poor thing's runway-ready pot against the wall. Decibel Jones smiled the kind of smile you throw out to everyone else in the queue when the cashier says the computer just broke.
What'll it be then, mister?
Gnashed Yilgar Blood Tub, entirely untroubled. A glob of acidic saliva hovered on his lip, threatening to fall at any moment.
I'm skint at the moment, thanks. I didn't exactly get to stop by a cash point on the way out of town. Besides, it'll be poisoned or punch me in the jaw or something.
Nah, this one's on Olabel the Friendless over there. He said to put anything you want on his tab. And it's safe. Olabil doesn't participate in the semi-finals. Wouldn't be fair.
Jones looked down the bar, through the rowdy throng, all the way back to the far corner by the utility closet, where an outsize, four-eared, innumerably tusked elephant, covered in thousands upon thousands of fireflies, was pretending to be terribly interested in a potted ficus.